Hey, recruiting enthusiasts, I'm Priyanka, and welcome to Tech Recruiting Unfiltered podcast, a podcast for gaining all the insider knowledge about the top recruiters in the tech industry. Great recruiters are not great because of their techniques. They're great because of their passion. Rightly said, and this stands absolutely true for our next guest, Ashish Mahajan, who's the Global Head Talent Partner at Moengage Inc. Having been involved in this industry for over two decades, Ashish has gained a comprehensive understanding and brings a wealth of knowledge and tips to the table. Welcome to the podcast, Ashish. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Priyanka. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So how are you doing today, Ashish?
Pretty good. And I'm all excited to address the audience out here and talk about my experience and what exactly has worked well for me.
I'm delighted to have you here as well. And, you know, to start off, can you tell us a bit about yourself and how you got started in this industry? And I'm curious to know, like, what drives your passion for it as well?
See, if you ask me, I am not a recruiter by choice. I'm a recruiter by chance. My profession started by chance rather than by choice. I passed out my master's in 2002, and I was like other MBA grads, I was also looking for a job. And then forcefully, I have landed up into this recruiting industry. And then this particular chance became a choice. And then later on, that choice became more of a passion. So that's how my journey in the recruiting industry took over. And I joined at a time when there were no job boards, there were no social recruiting. And it was a different ball game, because in my initial days, I used to be sitting outside a large SI's office on a weekend and distribute my business cards. And by Monday morning, my inbox used to be flooded with the resumes.
Nice.
So that's how I started my recruiting. And then slowly and steadily, this thing typically became more of a passion. And I started doing a lot of research and try to understand what I can differently learn in recruiting itself. So it's really a very exciting journey, and I'm always thrilled to be a recruiter.
Yeah, I think you've had a very interesting journey, and I'm very eager to learn more about it as well. And so I want to start off with talking to you about, you know, the whole assessment process. You know, it's a talent shortage market, and, you know, choosing the right candidate really matters. And I think one of the key components to getting that right is to ask the right questions in an interview. But I think even the best laid interview plans can go awry, you know, when there are multiple people involved. So in fact, you know, like 62% of the HR executives, I think they believe that their company's hiring managers are very inconsistent about, like, how they interview the candidates. And I think even 80% of the hiring managers, they could not identify the glaring flaws in a series of, you know, attitudinal interview questions. So I'm curious to know, like, how you approach the whole question strategy, and what are some key things you prioritize, and what are some areas you've often seen companies overlooking as well?
See, I think it's a great question if you ask me. See, I think over the years, a lesson which what exactly I've learned in the recruiting industry is, before you go ahead and interview any particular candidate, you really need to be prepared for the interview. Because if you typically go ahead without preparation, things will not fall in your place. Even till now, if I've been asked to interview a candidate, I will spend at least 15-20 minutes to go through the resume in detail. And I look at his projects, understand what sort of work he has done. And I will also look at his social media profile, maybe a LinkedIn profile or a Twitter profile or other areas or other profile which he currently is available on internet, to get more information about the candidate before I start up. And I think it is important for each and every recruiter to typically follow this particular practice. Because I think asking a lot of questions doesn't matter. What matters is what sort of questions you are asking, and are these questions typically right?
Yeah.
And I think what is more important is you need to ask questions based on candidate's required job competencies and not just based on what exactly he is going to interpret or answer correctly. See, whatever position you want to typically fulfill, right, you really need to have a guideline and you really need to look at from a larger perspective. What is that value which a candidate is going to bring on the table? What is this role all about, right? If you were in that particular role, if I was in that particular role, what sort of questions typically the hiring manager would be asking me? And if you ask some sort of a right questions, what happens is that the interview becomes more of a discussion. And then it gives you a platform where you can get to know more and more about the candidates, because that is where is more important. And candidate will typically like to answer those questions, and that typically brings or generates more interest level of the candidate. Because if you typically do not ask the right questions to the candidates, you may not be able to generate the interest. And in the end, the exercise which you are typically doing with the candidate, it may not be futile. And he may not be that keenly interested in the role which you are planning to offer him up. So for me, it is important. So my focus has been more in terms of, while I've been interviewing candidate, my focus has been more in terms of focusing on SAR. SAR means the questions are to be typically situation-based questions. They should be action-oriented questions, and they should typically focus on the result of action, because that is the philosophy or that is the focus which I typically bring in while I do any interviews with the candidate. I think this typically helps the recruiter to find out the right goal of the candidate. It will help the recruiter to understand what is the value with this candidate typically is gonna bring on the table. I could typically highlight some of the questions which typically I've been asking in the interview. Rather than going straightforward, I will typically ask, because majority of these questions, if you ask straightforward, candidates will be well prepared and they will be able to typically do a search on Google. So your question has to be in a very unconventional way. So a couple of questions which I typically ask the candidate is a situation where they have completely messed up in their job role, because that is where this is more of a situational question, and that is where they would be able to think what went wrong, what exactly they have done, and why were things not under their control, or what exactly went wrong. I would also ask them questions in terms of their unconventional way of solving a problem, because that gives you an idea that about the more of their thought process, what exactly they are thinking through. Maybe if the conventional way is not working out, what were the different solutions they had in mind and how well they went in terms of solving those particular problems. Okay. One of my favorite questions which I typically ask the candidate is, if they were me, right, what is the question they are going to ask me in a similar situation? If they were, because that's typically you try to understand more about them, and I also try to understand about their risk taking appetite in their current job role. So all these typical questions which are focused more on value, that is what exactly I try to ask and get more and more information from the candidate. And in between, my question will also be on those situations which they have answered, to counter question them if they would have done this way, what would have been the result. So try to keep more and more interaction very futile as well as very much interesting.
Yeah, I think you've greatly put it. And, you know, the interviewers need to do homework on, you know, both the role as well as the candidate, so that the candidate also will feel interested and valued, like you said. And yeah, I think you've given some great tips on how companies can formulate their question strategy as well. I just have one follow-up question for my previous question. So, you know, as someone who has worked in this industry for more than 21 plus years, can you tell us a bit about how the evolution you have observed in both assessments and candidates over time?
Great question again. See, if you talk about evaluation in terms of assessment, I would put it in two different brackets. Right. So if you talk about, I would talk about a bracket which is probably between 2001 to 2010. And then I will also put it between 2011 to start of pandemic and then post pandemic. So because this will be in this way, I will be able to answer it in a very defined way. If you ask me the evolution of assessments, right? See, during the stage when Web 2.0 or your Y2K got over, right? During that time, the concept of assessment was very, very minimalistic in the market. And there were very minimal, small number of organizations which were typically using the psychometric assessment. One of the reasons being because the concept of behavioral scientists within the industry were not known much. Second thing, the assessment cost was pretty high, and it was only at a leadership level many of the organizations were typically been using assessments. And even if you talk about assessments at an entry or middle level, majority of the organizations were typically not using any particular platform in terms of assessing those candidates.
Yeah.
They typically used to have their own set of questions or a question bank, which they typically used to design. And based on that, they used to give those questions on a piece of paper, and which they will ask the candidate to typically answer it. So that was the initial time, which I would say would be from 2001 till 2008 or 2009. And it was really a time consuming process, because at that point of time, nobody had typically thought that in terms of assessment, they could typically be got over to a particular platform, and it can be run over a particular platform, or could and all these question banks could be run over a particular platform. So that was the initial phase, and it was typically a very time consuming phase. I still remember in 2003, 2004, while I was managing campuses, I used to sit and with the hiring managers to design those questions and everything. And we were having question banks, and we typically used to have four or five sets, and each candidate was given a different set of question papers. And evaluating also used to become very Herculean task, because we used to carry those transparencies with us, and keeping those transparencies on top of the answer sheet, and then doing the correction. It was a very time consuming process. And then coming up with the merit also used to take a lot of time. This particular thing has really has gone through a lot of transition, and there are a lot of tools in the market. You talk about Metal, you talk about We Create Problems, your own tool, you talk about HackerRank, you talk about HackerEarth. There have been a lot of tools right now which are in the market and which have been doing a phenomenal job in terms of assessment. One thing which really has caught my eye in last 7 or 8 years has been the code snippets, which typically these particular tools have been able to bring on to assess the coding I would say expertise of the candidates, to understand how strong they are on logic, how strong they typically are able to solve the problem, what has been their thought process. I think that has been one of the key aspects in terms of these assessment tools. And another advantage that these assessment tools have been able to bring is all these assessment tools come up with a video. There is a proctoring. So, and you can typically look at whether the candidate is looking at Google or other things, and the test typically gets blocked. I think these are the great innovations which the overall assessment tools have gone through, and it really has helped recruiters in terms of evaluating the overall talent within the industry. And other advantage with these tools have been the turnaround time, because they've been able to give you the overall score within minimum turnaround time. You can play around with the data. It will give you the merit across each particular subject, across each particular topic. And that way you are able to make decisions pretty faster.
Yeah, I think, like you said, it's technology has also evolved a lot. Assessments and candidates, their mindset, everything has evolved a lot. I think recruiters need to start adapting and tailoring it to the current environment, like you said. And technology having been evolved, it's made a lot of things easier for, you know, recruiters, reducing their manual work, turnaround time, like you said. So yeah, I think it's really great. And so I want to talk to you about, you know, assessing both the hard skills and the soft skills. See, it's really important now more than ever to assess both, you know, the relevant skills to hire a better candidate, even the soft skills as important as the hard skills. And so according to like a study by LinkedIn, I think 89% of the bad hires often lack the basic soft skills. And identifying such skills has usually been a huge challenge to recruiters. So hence the need for a revamped assessment process that emphasizes such soft skills along the hard skills is really important. So I want to know how you go about assessing a candidate's soft skills. And so from your experience, what kind of assessments have worked best for you?
See, one thing which I've really learned in the industry is, see, if you look at any particular job role, right, 25% of the skill requirement in that particular job is always going to be on the soft skill side.
Yeah.
75% is going to be on the technology or on the technical side. But if you look at any role, 25% demand is always in that any particular job role is going to be in the softer side. Mm-hmm. And if you ask me, fortunately or unfortunately, recruiters, what I've seen majorly in the industry, they typically try to ignore or they try to do not do justice in terms of evaluating the soft skills. That's what exactly has my experience. And even if you look at the overall time a recruiter will spend on a resume is not going to be more than 8 to 10 seconds. Right?
Yeah.
Or even less than that. and even your ATSs typically do not have that particular search criteria or tendency where they could typically highlight in detail about the soft skill, right? So what is, in that scenario, what matters is, how do you typically, while you are being evaluating a candidate or while you are talking to a candidate, what is more important is you need to ask very right questions in your initial screening to understand and to evaluate on the softer aspect of the candidate. See, one thing which I typically talk to a candidate while I've been evaluating candidate on the softer aspect is to understand, while he has been doing his current role or while he has been delivering his current job, what are the key softer aspects which are necessary for him to do that particular job? And he needs to cite those aspects with right and relevant examples, because that gives me an idea that what sort of soft skill he's been possessing and what sort of soft skills he's been professing in his current job. So that's something which I have been currently been following up during my initial interview screening. If I've been doing any interview screening, or if I've been asked to do any interviews, right? That's something which I clearly focus on. Other than that, I always ask my candidates to typically stack rank their soft skill on a scale of 1 to 5. And I will also ask them to give me a justification why exactly a particular skill is 1 out of 5 or 5 out of 5 or 4 out of 5. And I will again ask them to give me certain examples, what exactly they have done in that aspect. Third important thing, which I've also been asking my team members, is whenever they get an employer referral as a part of their any particular requirement in terms of resumes, they need to go back to the referral and ask the person who has referred it, as per them, how would they rate this particular candidate on the soft skill? Because if they are knowing that candidate and if they are referring it, they should be in a position to mention or evaluate or let us know that at what level their soft skills typically are. Then another important thing which we have been doing in terms of a background verification, right? When we have been doing any background checks with the reporting manager of any candidate, we also ask them to typically stack rank their your softer skills or softer aspects, because that gives us a lot of information about whether this candidate is gonna be a right fit for this role or not. And lastly, there are situation-based questions which we typically ask them, or we'll give them some problem statements which typically would focus more on the softer aspects, and we will try to understand whether they are able to do justice to that problem from a softer aspect or not. And while explaining them a particular job role, we would also make sure that the softer aspects of the job role are also being shared across to them. And then we try to evaluate and understand that how well they're gonna typically handle those aspects in terms of, I would say, strategic thinking, or in terms of learning, or in terms of their interpersonal skills, or in terms of their communication, or in terms of their relationship building or leadership. All these aspects we try to focus in terms of the job description and try to understand how well they will be able to deliver in a given situation. And that's how we are trying to typically assess the candidate's softer aspects. Apart from this, yes, there are different online tools or online assessments which are there. In fact, while we try to figure out the communication of a candidate, there are different communication online tests which are available, which typically we ask the candidates to go through it. And even there are neuropsychic or psychometric tests which we have been using for our leadership hiring to understand whether they will be on the softer aspect and to figure out whether they will be a right fit for this particular role or not.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, assessing the soft skills is really important, because it's not, you know, it's not a good hire if they have only a hard skills, and if they're not able to like work with the team or have that communication, collaboration, and all of the other skills, because then in the long run, it won't work out for both the employee and the organization. And so as crucial it is to have a, you know, solid recruiting strategy in place, I think it's equally important to have a good retaining strategy as well. And I think employees are being asked to do more than ever before, you know, often with fewer resources, I would say. And now the great resignation is seeing loyal talent move on as well. And the growing demand for salary transparency is another trend which is having a influence on, you know, the rising trend of retention raises or bonuses. But I think employees resigning aren't always fueled by salary. So some employees might find comfort in, you know, perks and benefits such as training to, you know, upskill, or flexible work, or working from home, etc. So in your opinion, what steps can companies take to effectively, like, you know, improve their returning strategies, and any tips you can share with us from your experience?
See, In today's scenario, if you ask me, building or retaining an employee typically is one of the crucial aspects of any HR person.
Yeah.
Because retention at any given point of time will really matter, because the cost of hiring has been increasing day by day. Because when you talk about cost of hiring, you are not only looking at cost of recruiting, you are also looking at your training expenses. You are also looking at your the productive time spent by your interviewers or by your hiring managers in getting that particular person on board, right? And this if you typically convert them into a dollar value, it typically will be on a very higher side. So it becomes imperative that whatever said and done, wherever there is a possibility, recruiters or the HR person should typically focus more from a retention perspective. And I think every organization will have their own EVPs in terms of retaining that employees, right? Because that is what is the key. Because whatever is working well in my organization may not work well in other organization, because you really need to understand what is the purpose or what is the value which is going to drive that particular employee in that particular organization, right? Because that is going to be a very important key, or that is going to be a very important factor, if you ask me, in terms of retaining any particular person in the organization. Apart from that, I think these days what is key focus out here is, see, your engagement really matters a lot. When you talk about engagement in that scenario, your engagement has to be from the time when you first reach out to a candidate and explain him about what exactly the job role is all about, talk to him about the organization culture, right? And give him that information about it, and be transparent with the candidate as much as possible. And once you, during the onboarding also, it is also important that you provide him all the information, whatever training is required, you give him that right set of training. So building that engagement culture or the employee engagement culture is the most important part in terms of employee retention, I think, in today's scenario. Second thing, I think what is more important is not from a compensation perspective, what is more important is going to be from a reward perspective. And reward definitely cannot be your, every time cannot be your incentivized reward. Even a shout out, I think, will really make a matter well for any particular employee. When he gets a shout out in front of 50 or 100 people, he feels, yes, he has been recognized. And I think most important part in terms of retention is recruiting your right employees. So when I say right employees, how well they are able to reciprocate to your EVPs. So if your employee value proposition is more in terms of focusing employee centricity or freedom to execute, right? Are you typically been following that up, or are you typically been professing it up? And are you also making sure that your employees also follow that? Because that is also going to be a key in terms of your employee engagement. I think because as an organization, this typically has to start at your leadership level. Because if your leaders are typically been professing this, and if you are able to create that culture within your organization, and if you are able to bring those values, I don't think so there are going to be any challenges, right? And another important perspective in terms of retention, I think, is typically what sort of avenues which you are going to provide in terms of professional development. How strong is your IGP process? How strong is your succession planning process? How strong is your career planning aspects? So are you providing some sort of a mentorship or a mentoring or a coaching to your current employees? Are you showing them the way and path in terms of their career development? Because in today's scenario, what exactly a person will typically look at is a career growth. I think that is a key mantra to a success, because that's what exactly they'll be looking at, whether I've been valued in that organization or whether if I have to move from one level to another level, right? What sort of career counseling I can get from the organization, right? What is the feedback mechanism? How frequently I'll be getting that feedback? If I'm going wrong somewhere, whether there will be someone to let me know I'm going wrong, so that I can typically work on the right path. I think these are the key areas which typically, as an organization, we have been following up in terms of our retention program. Here, I would like to highlight one of the key initiatives which our LNOD took up in the last month, which was a career week within Moengage.
Okay.
And the idea was typically to provide a complete individual development platform or a plan or a program to the employees who are really interested in that. So we organized a lot of mentoring sessions, coaching sessions, and let them know, understand where exactly they want to move, what exactly they want to do. So this could typically help them in terms of working on the right career move, what exactly their overall career plans are. And I think that was a great initiative, which overall, from an organization perspective, everybody liked it. And then another thing which we have been continuously been focusing is more on the buddy program. The moment a candidate is being hired or onboarded, we make sure that there is a buddy which is aligned or assigned to him, so that at the initial first 1.5 months, whatever challenges that person has, the buddy is there to work with him closely in terms of his asset allocation, in terms of his transition, in terms of his whatever tools he or she requires, in terms of his induction. Each and every software aspect is being taken through this buddy channel.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, your Moengage is doing great with, you know, having such initiatives wherein they're focusing a lot about how they can make their, you know, talent or the employees feel valued, as well as how they can retain them. And, you know, and it's very important that, you know, the companies figure out what works for them and, you know, make a really good EVP which showcases and their culture, and being transparent as well, like you said, and building that whole engagement culture. So yeah, I think it's really great. And
yeah, I like to add a couple of more things out here. See, even what we have also been focusing is also the employee wellness.
Yeah.
Both during the COVID era and post COVID era, that has become one of our major focus areas, because for us, we do not want employees to typically get burned out on their job. For us, their emotional as well as their mental and physical well-being is one of the key areas which we really want to focus on. Because if they do not get burned out on their jobs, right, they will be able to contribute to a larger extent, and the productivity will definitely get increased. So these are typical areas which we have also been focusing on.
Yeah, that's really great. And like you said, I wanted to touch up a bit about on the employee experience, which you were talking about, and how important it is more than ever now. And a lot of companies are struggling with it and its prioritization, you know, because especially post-pandemic, like you said, you know, keeping the employees connected and engaged, you know, in the new remote setting has been really challenging. And employers they're reporting increased productivity working from home, but the productivity gains are coming with the cost of our mental health. And this is why the recruiters and, you know, companies will have to reinvent the whole employee experience and, you know, adjust to the new realm. So could you share with us some ways you have found successful in redefining the whole employee experience and, you know, from your experience in the industry so far?
So I think employee experience, if you ask me, is a key to any organization's success, because if they are able to give a great employee experience to their team members, definitely the attrition decreases and the retention typically increases. And when you talk about employee experience as an whole, I think what is more important in terms of employee experience is how you can directly focus more in terms of their performance and development. Because if you're able to do justice in terms of their performance and development, employees typically will be engaged more in terms of the organization. See, what we have typically done is we typically have built up developed a complete employee experience strategy. And when I talk about our employee experience strategy, what we have done is that we have designed this strategy on three focus areas. One is typically aligning your employee experience with your organization's EVP. So when I say organization EVP, with your purpose, your brand, and your culture. So for us, it is one of the key areas. For example, I'll give you one of the key examples, because one of our key focus areas or EVPs is customer centricity or customer centric culture, right? So yeah. as an organization, we have been promoting this customer centric culture from the time when we start looking at a candidate, or when we start hiring or interviewing a candidate. In the interview process also, we try to focus more in terms of this. So while we have been interviewing candidates, we typically try to figure out and try to get as much as information possible in terms of customer centricity from the candidate, because we try to give him different situations, different problem statements to understand how well he's going to service the customer in those particular situations. Even in our onboarding process, we typically try to focus more from that perspective. Even in our performance reviews, we try to focus more from that perspective. So for us, that is one of the key parts. Our focus is more in terms of aligning to our EVP. So once we try to align to our EVP, we try to get the right purpose and we try to propagate more from a cultural perspective. Because if we are hiring anybody in our organization, that means he typically fits within our culture. And if he fits within our culture, then he should be able to propagate and profess that particular culture. And that's how our employee engagement starts from the very beginning. Then I think another focus area has been more in terms of, I would say, when we are onboarding any new hire, right? During our performance review, what we typically look at is more in terms of we care about them, right? We try to show as much as empathy in terms of this, because humility is also one of our key areas. Even during our appraisal processes, during our interview processes, or during our interview processes, that is another area where we have been typically focusing more on this. And another important focus area in terms of our employee engagement has been more of ownership and accountability, the freedom to execute. I think that is one of the key areas which our typical employees look at. Whether I'm getting freedom to execute things or whether there is a micromanagement, right? Because today people will have a lot of ideas, right? But you need to shape those ideas into reality. And you have to do that. You really need to give your employees that ownership, that accountability, or that freedom. And which at MoEngage we typically profess, as well as it is our daily culture, that if you have ideas, go ahead and execute. Let's do that. Let's try to focus more from that perspective. And that really has worked well for us in terms of our employee engagement. Other than that, there are other key factors. What we also look at is the core needs of our employee, because I think one of our core needs typically is more in terms of employee well-being. And that's what exactly we have been doing. Other than that, other areas, what we have been doing in terms of employee engagement has been people who have been in the system from long time. We try to incentivize them up. That is another thing which we have been doing. And giving them right coaching, giving them a right mentorship in terms of their career path, career development. These are certain things which we have been typically been doing in terms of this. Other than that, what we've also been doing is we have been doing focusing on a lot of events, internal events, whether they are hackathons, whether they typically are events on certain other initiatives, which could typically be, I would talk about in terms of your reunion or bringing in fresh idea, or also focusing more in terms of some certain contest within the organization through which we are able to engage employees. Then other focus areas which we have been doing is that we have also been taking a lot of feedback from the employees, what we should do better to make the place more employer friendly. Even during exit interviews, that feedback is being collected, and then we typically try to implement whatever is possible to implement within that ecosystem.
Yeah, I think amazing, because you've given a really, detailed way on how, folks can improve, their employee experience, whole strategy, and especially post-pandemic as well, how they can engage with the folks more. And I really liked all the focus areas on which MoEngage is, putting all their time and efforts in. And yeah, and I think I want to talk to you about how we can tailor the recruitment to the younger generations, because as you know, like millennials are already the largest workforce and Gen Z is slowly catching up and joining their slightly older peers as well. And it's inevitable that the youth will soon become the principal generation in the world of work. So recruiters will have to tailor their campaigns and strategies according to both the generations now. So what are your thoughts on this? And according to you, like, what kind of tweaks should be made to the recruitment campaigns and strategies to keep up and stay on top of the game?
See, if you look at currently from a recruiting perspective, right? So currently, we, as you rightly pointed out, we have Gen Z, we have millennials, we have Gen Zs, and apart from that, we have baby boomers also, right? So in that scenario, what is more important is how do you typically try to understand and understand each and every different generation? Because if you are not able to understand all these different generations, right? It is gonna be very, very difficult, because these are typically diverse workforce. Because if you talk about baby boomers or Generation X or millennials or Gen Z, so everyone typically has a different mindset and a different perspective. And when you typically try to, when you have to reach out to them, your communication has to be typically tailor-made, because you cannot go ahead and reach out to a baby boomer on an Instagram, or you typically cannot reach out to a baby boomer on a YouTube, right? So you really need to understand that at which particular platform these guys typically spend more time on, what is their background, what is they are looking at, right? And what sort of a typical mindset and thought process these guys have, and how do you typically try to attract, on which particular platform do you really need to attract them up, right? And what is that they are looking for? Because if you are talking about baby boomers who typically will be in their mid-40s or in their early 50s, right? For them, what is going to be more important is going to be health, their mental well-being, their overall physical well-being, because mm-hmm. they are entering into that particular area of their life cycle where that becomes a major focus area. So how do you typically focus by bringing in a deal breaker and talk about all these aspects during your recruiting process, right? Because yeah. it becomes more important. Second important thing for these guys is going to be more from a stability or from a security perspective, right? Yeah. How stable your organization is, right? And how well you have been able to typically do in the recessionary times or during the pandemic times or the post-pandemic times, probably also looking from a longevity perspective. So all these things are going to be very, very much important. And then what sort of advertising platforms you need to utilize, because many of these people will typically be using mobile or desktop. But even in mobile or desktop as a platform, are you going to use LinkedIn, or are you going to typically use an online job portal or stuff like that to reach out to these particular talent? Because that is going to be the key, and that's how you are going to attract. And then you also need to understand that what exactly they look in a job. Apart from these incentives, what else they look in a job, right? So accordingly, your communication has to be there. So similarly, if you talk about millennials, right? And even I am the part of that particular group, right? Because our 75% of working population by 2025 is going to be in this particular group, because somebody who has been in their late 70s to mid of 90s are going to be the part of this particular group. So you really, again, need to understand what is going to drive them, right? Because these are the people who are among us, the great innovators, and they think very smartly, right?
Yep.
And how do you try to engage a meaningful conversation or meaningful contribution to them, right? So for them, what is going to be more important is going to be their professional development, right?
Yep.
Because these are the guys who are typically in their end of 20s or in 30s or in early 40s. So for them, what is going to be, and most of these guys will have at least, I would say, close to around 10 years of experience or a little bit more.
Hmm.
So they'll be more focused in terms of their career development, more in terms of their professional development. So, and apart from this, they will also be driven by your company culture, because that's going to be the key area, because these people typically give a lot of weightage to the culture,
yeah.
right? And specifically on the, I would say, on the social side of it, right? So that is also going to be important. Then you also need to talk about values as well as benefits as an organization, which you really need to provide, whether it is going to be a remote working, whether it is going to be a flexi working, right? Or whether they are going to be gym memberships, or whether they are going to be free lunches, right? And most important thing is, what is the difference they can make in their career with this particular job to provide them opportunity? So it is typically, how do you provide them opportunities to make a difference? Because that's what exactly is going to be the key focus in terms of when you are communicating with them, because their thought process again is typically very, very different from the baby boomers in that respect, because these guys are very ambitious guys. These guys are one who typically communicate in a very personalized way or in a very professional way. So for them, for us, it is very, very important to create that culture, to bring that value and let them know that this is what exactly as an organization we are willing to give them in a particular job role, because that communication has to be very, very much important. For example, if you have a particular job, right, how well you are gonna communicate to them with probably your job statement, your job summary should be like that, where they typically can relate themselves to a day-to-day work. Because if you're able to focus on those areas, I think you'll be able to do justice in that scenario. And then if you talk about Generation Z, which are typically your digital natives or which are typically always connected to the devices, right? So for them, what is more important again is that how do you communicate with them? Because majority of these people typically will spend a lot of time on your Snapchats or on your Instagram or on YouTube or on gaming sites, right?
Yeah.
So typically, which are the mediums or platform where you really need to communicate with these guys, right? Then, and these typical guys are the ones who typically get bored pretty soon, right? So how do you typically keep that sense of motivation or keep that sense of drive always on a high? So while you interact with them, you really need to communicate in such a way that they feel, yes, this role is something where they can really add a lot of value to the society, because that is what exactly is important to them. Because these people typically look at what is their contribution to the society.
Yeah.
So that is what is important, right? Then you should typically emphasize on the, I would say, is on the flexibility, because these people typically look at more of a flexibility in terms of role, because they are not the people who would typically be sitting 9 to 5 or 9 to 6 in an office environment. They would typically be preferring the role where they can typically sit in a shared workspace, or they can typically sit at home or at different places and could typically work accordingly, right?
Yeah.
Then apart from that, for these guys, what is more important is the career should be very incentivizing or rewarding. When I say incentivizing or rewarding it, I'm not talking about the salary part out here. Probably they always want the sense of recognition of their work, because that is very, very much important. So whenever you make a communication to them in terms of this, so that sense of recognition, that sense of shout outs are very, very much important. What sort of reward policy you have, what sort of different rewards you typically have, how frequently a person can earn that reward. Then So these are going to be important aspects in terms of this. Then other focus area is going to be, are you a equal opportunity employer? What sort of diversity focus you have, right? What sort of policy on diversity and inclusion do you have? Do you also hire people from the LGBTQ community or not, right?
Yeah. So
this is also going to be important perspectives to this. Other than that, they would also emphasize on the level of support given on the role, because whether you would have typically buddy or some sort of a support from the manager, what sort of trainings will be provided, right? What sort of a digital experience will be given to me from the very beginning, right? What sort of culture is there a micromanagement, or whether I will be given a free hand? So I think these are the important aspects while we reach out to the audience, all right, in the industry to recruit. We typically try to design our communication in such a way that we're able to lucrate them for a particular role.
Yeah, I think it's a really fantastic answer. You've given a very detailed approach to how they can tailor, you know, the recruitment to the younger generations. And I think the first step to success, just like you said, is to understand how each generation works, what is their mindset, and, you know, tailor your communication as well as the strategy to it. And yeah, like you said, I think culture and transparency has become a deal breaker for all the candidates now, and it's become a must, and it's no longer a very less important goal. And yeah, I think before we wrap up our conversation, I wanted to ask you, Ashish, so your experience in the industry goes back to more than 2 decades. So can you tell us a bit about how the industry has changed over time, you know, to from when you had started out to Fast Track to today? And can you share with us any lessons you have learned that have helped you gain like new perspectives as well as like changed your recruiting approach?
I think for me, every day has been a key learning.
Because yeah,
when you typically are in a recruiting business or when you are into recruiting, you end up meeting a lot of candidates on a daily basis. So when you interview them up, you try to learn from them, right? Because I've been recruiting from last 2 decades, and I've recruited baby boomers, I've recruited millennials, I've recruited Gen Z, and each of these candidates have a different perspective. And then you try learning from each and every person's thought process, their thinking, and try to imbibe all the good things. So if you ask me, recruiting since last 2 decades have changed by leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
Because the time when I started recruiting, right, it was a scenario where we didn't have the concept of job boards, and even if it was very expensive, and companies typically do not wanted to invest on job boards. As discussed earlier recruiting career used to start only on weekends, because whenever I used to go for a weekend drive, sit outside the premises of Infosys or Wipro or HCL or Accenture, and used to talk to the candidate, circulate my visiting card. That was one thing. Second thing which I started doing, people right now talking about social media hiring, but in fact, if you ask me, social media hiring existed at that point of time.
Okay.
So we had the concept of Yahoo groups at that point of time.
Yeah.
And Yahoo groups were there, and then there were a lot of meetups which used to happen. I still remember I used to recruit on Microsoft technology at that point of time. And every fortnight, ThoughtWorks used to have a seminar which was open to the entire public in 2002 or 2003. And they used to discuss on the new innovations on the Microsoft technology, new things which are coming in Microsoft technology. Someone from the industry will come and would talk for at least for half an hour or 45 minutes. And that was a place where I used to hunt my people.
Okay.
So that was another area where I used to typically hunt my candidates. And then Microsoft started the concept of MVP, Microsoft Most Valuable Professional. Okay. And there I used to get a lot of names on their website, and I used to headhunt these guys, calling up on their board line number and then reaching out to them, and then getting in touch with them, and then taking them to the next level of recruiting. So it was, if you ask me, it was a very interesting and a very, I would say, the scientific approach that even that point of time, which was existing. But given the fact that every change is a law of nature, and even recruiting has changed, and it has changed because for a good, because I think with all these new tools and new technologies coming in, it has really made the life of recruiter easy in one way, but still there are a lot of challenges which recruiter typically has to go through. It's not that easy, because until and unless you have that particular mindset and you do not do your homework properly, it's still gonna be a bigger challenge for a recruiter to recruit the right set of candidates. Because from a time where there was no job boards, it moved to a Web 2.0 where there were job boards. From job boards, it went to a situation where there were ATSs. From ATS, it typically went to social media hiring or a social media recruiting. Then from there, recruiting has moved into your online assessment tools. From there, it has moved to artificial intelligence, right? So now with artificial intelligence, you are able to typically do a lot of forecasting, a lot of predictive analysis. And with that, it typically helps to you to typically start working backwards, because you will typically you will do a lot of analysis on service line wise hiring or your product line wise hiring or your vertical line wise hiring, and understand these are the people which I need to look at, what has been my overall success rate in last 2 years or last 3 years. All right. It will look at the data and it will give you a complete funnel. I have to do these many offers to get these many joinees, to get these many offers. These are the number of resumes which I need to get. And to get these many number of resumes, these are the number of interviews I need to do. And if I have to do these many interviews, this is the number of hours which I need from the panel. So you get the entire data in a jittery, right? And then you start working towards it, and to make sure that each and everything is set up in a very planned or in a phased manner. So I think it has been a great way forward for recruiting, and which has really helped recruiter in a larger perspective.
Yeah, I think it's really amazing. And one thing which I really liked and enjoyed when you walked me through the journey is how much fun you've had over time, and back then how it was and how it's now, and how I can literally see how your passion has grown over time. And yeah, it's really nice to, you know, talk to people who are really passionate about their industry and about what they do. And yeah, that brings us to the end of our conversation, Ashish. And I had a wonderful time chatting with you, and I really love the insights and tips you've shared with us today. So thanks again for taking the time to do this.
It's been an honor and it's been a privilege talking to you. And I would really thank the We Create Problems team for giving me this opportunity to talk to you and share my insights and share my experience. Thank you and all the best.
Thanks for listening to Tech Recruiting Unfiltered podcast. We hope you enjoyed as well as learned from it. To gain more such insights, join us for our next episode. You can follow us on LinkedIn at Technical Hiring Showcase page and our website technical-hiring.com to receive all the updates. That's all for this episode, folks. See you next time.